good evening and welcome to the Could Have Been Champions Saturday Soiree on ABC Local Radio and streaming across the World Wide Web. And we're happy to be here. We're ticking a box today. It's the 1st of November, so we're initiating broadcast in a new month. I've never broadcast in November 2008 before. I hope you're as excited as I am, Jeff Richardson.
Hey, Billy. Hello, dear listeners too. I got a shock today when, what was I doing? Somehow or other, the fact that it was the 1st of November was right in my face, as young people say. I went, ooh, 1st of November, I had a little shake and a shiver. But I'm over it now and I'm used to it.
And you have to follow that up with something. You have to go, ooh, 1st of November, and then you have to say...
Pinch and punch or something?
No, you really should say, and Ian Cover might know this. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Billy. Hello, Jeff. Hello, listeners.
Oh, it's the 1st of November, and then you say... It'll be Christmas before you know it. Come on, boys.
Yeah, stop thinking.
The listeners got it. If you'd like to call us tonight, we wish you would. 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222. We're happy to take your calls, or you could just send us an electric mail. Send it to abc.net.au/could-have-beens. We were lamenting last week on air that we were just going to the web and we missed all the people who generally listen on the wireless but can't make a webcast. And we got a lot of emails from folks saying, we're here for you, and that made us feel very good. So welcome aboard, you streamers.
You know, it won't be Christmas before you know it, because I can't get into the it'll be Christmas before you know it way of thinking. Do we get past the Melbourne guilt? That's taking up quite a lot of my mental energy at the moment.
I listened to the races today and just
twists and turns.
Prepare myself for it, yeah. Twists, turns and breaking down of barriers.
Yeah, the various campaigns in their courses they're following leading up to Tuesday, there's been ups, downs, surprises, scratchings, late withdrawals, surprise... people jumping up off the waiting list and getting a run in the cup.
Yep.
And we even had it today with an absolute outsider storming the derby.
Mm. Anyway, that is very much the way of the drama intrigue that surrounds racing, but particularly the Melbourne Cup and the Spring Carnival. The barrier draw is being done tonight, is it not? Or the draw tonight?
Are we doing it? They should let us do it.
Well, we'll
keep
going
an eye
to the cup.
We'll keep an eye on that. If it unfolds while we're going to air.
Before you can do the draw, of course, you have to have final acceptors. And they'll be clarified at some stage. Gerard Whateley, Drew Morford and David Morrow from ABC Grandstand were out at Flemington today. They may report in later, tell us what's happening, because that's the focus of the week ahead, no doubt. And it's very handy to have this to take one's mind off the cricket.
And, why would you want your mind taken off the cricket? Tasmania, top of the ladder.
Oh, no, there's the cricket and then there's the cricket.
Australia are doing very well against India.
They're hanging in there.
In the women's cricket at
the
SCG.
Yes, they had a win at the SCG and all. And there's domestic cricket as well and all. So it's all the cricket.
I think it's good for cricket.
I think what'll happen is you get the cup week out of the way, and then Grandstand can devote itself to Australian cricket. Where to now? We'll take your call.
There's a talk back topic. Ooh. But speaking of the Grandstand team, we, the Could Have Been Champions, will be joining them at Flemington on Tuesday afternoon. We'll be going to air from midday right through until 6, with coming live from the parade ring. Flemington.
Which is very much a case of check your local guides, but I'm sure you might better pick us up on the web because that's where we tend to live these days. That's all ahead of us in the week with the cup on Tuesday. But tonight, Billy, what's on tonight's edition of the Saturday Soiree?
Well, Ian, we're talking sport at the moment, and directly we'll be talking to an Australian netballer in our Eye on Your Town segment. We're looking at Ipswich tonight, and Australian netballer Laura Geetz is from Ipswich.
Right.
We'll be talking to Laura. Laura's a fabulous representative in netball for this country. Grew up in Ipswich in Queensland, which is about 45 minutes from Brisbane, about an hour and a half from the Gold Coast, so it's all there. We'll find out more about Ipswich from Laura directly.
That's a part of our An Eye on Your Town series here of a Saturday night.
And in the last portion of the show, the last helping of the show, would be appropriate to talk to Scott Watkins-Sully, our on-the-road chef, and very symmetrical with cricket too. He'll be doing a chicken sarg curry.
He will too. When I first looked at Scott's recipe when he sent through to us, I thought it said a chicken slag curry.
I thought it said a chicken sage curry. So we're all having a crack at it.
Young Scotty. Andy thought it said chicken sago curry.
Scotty will sort us out with that shortly. Coming up during the Saturday soiree with the Could Have Been Champions, after that, in all that stuff in the first hour, we'll be revisiting Georgia Fields and her fabulous band, The Freeways. Champs will be reporting in from, where is he, Billy?
He's at the Malden Folk Festival.
Right. And we're continuing a tradition here on the Saturday soiree of getting out to the league's clubs.
Oh, where are we going tonight?
We're going to the Moorabbin RSL in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And we'll be joining Daryl Cotton as he's
excellent.
About to ascend the steps up to the stage.
My understanding is that Daryl might even be on stage and can get a bit of audience participation, which will be a first for the soiree.
And, of course, Billy, you'll have another CAC track.
Yes, I have. I've got something from the United Kingdom tonight.
Tommy Cooper? We're hanging out for Tommy.
Any clues? Decade?
Dad's Army?
No, not Dad's Army.
I put in a request for Dad's Army.
It is an ensemble. Company
though. Ensemble.
Yes.
Okay.
They were very successful as individual performers as well as being an ensemble. But that'll be in the middle of the program.
I'm just a bit nervous now.
Why? What are you thinking?
It might be Derek and Clive.
Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross.
Well, someone's tried something similar at the BBC in the last few days.
Stay tuned, folks. Yeah. And if you've got some friends, you want to just do that thing you do on the computer like my kids do and tell them it may be Derek and Clive.
Laura Geitz. G'day, Laura.
Hi, how are you going?
Very well, thanks. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And it's very good of you too to allow yourself to be distracted tonight on the eve of a very important game representing your country.
Yeah, no, that's right. We've got our last game tomorrow against the Silver Fans. Tomorrow afternoon, so we'll just have a team dinner tonight together, and then tomorrow's our last day, and we've finished netball for the year. So,
How long before you're required at dinner, Laura?
Not until another hour or so.
Well, we'll keep you going for 2 hours, get you into trouble. You're late for dinner, you'll be fined.
Yeah. We had skin folds done today, so that might be doing me a favour.
Well, you've had the skin folds, you can eat what you like.
Exactly, that's another way of looking at it.
Now, I'm not aware of any sport doing skin folds on players, on the eve of a match or during the course. It's usually during the pre-season rather than during the course of the actual season.
Yeah, no, that's right. We have skin folds done a couple of times during the year, so just to sort of keep an eye on us, I suppose. But so it doesn't really bother us all that much.
Now, Laura, tomorrow's game marks the end of the netball calendar for the year. How long's the off season?
The ANZ, like our Firebirds team, they've been in that off season for quite some time now. So they start training in the next couple of weeks, whereas we're allocated an 8-week break, so that's just for us, just to take a break, obviously, and get away from it all. So we'll probably start training again around mid to the end of January.
So. Oh, that's not too bad then. So you get a good break, because
I know the
AFL players are back into it again already.
It does. It seems a bit like that, and I suppose 8 weeks sounds like quite a long time, but I mean it doesn't take long to come around and you feel like you're starting all over again, so you really do have to make the most of the time that you are given off.
Well, that's obvious. Oh, sorry, Billy, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say, reading your player profile here on the Firebirds website, I look at your tip for young players, and I'm a father of two young basketballers, not netballers, but don't let it become a task. Is what after your 8 weeks off, of course, you'll just be looking forward to getting into the pre-season training, won't you?
Well, that's right, because, you do, I suppose, towards the end of the season, you feel a little bit like, oh, I could really do with a break. But once you've had at least 2 weeks off, you kind of, I mean, most of the girls, we all sort of do our own fitness, or, you know, we go for a jog or just keep up our own level of fitness, because you do have a short break, and it doesn't take long to feel like you want to get back into it again. So, I mean, yeah, like it has been pretty intense this last tour and that. But I mean, yeah, the 8 weeks will be good. But I mean, for those 8 weeks, it's not like we won't be doing any exercise or doing our own fitness by any means. So it's really, I think, something that you just feel better going out and doing a run, or, you know, going for a swim or something just yourself. So, yeah.
Keeping all the limbs limbered.
Yeah, that's right.
Laura, we're looking at the Darling Downs area tonight on the Eye on Your Town part of the program. And we said you were from Ipswich, but you're really from a little town near Ipswich, which is Ellera. Tell us about Ellera.
Yeah, that's right. Ellera's about halfway between Toowoomba and Warwick, so it's just a tiny little town that I've grown up in. I was born in Ipswich, and my dad has lived in Ellera all his life, and we live on a cattle and grain property just outside of Ellera. So, Dad's lived his whole life there, and I grew up, spent my whole childhood there. I went to primary school in Ellera, and then went on to high school at Scott's VGC College in Warwick. So, yeah, spent my whole life until I was 18 in Ellera, so spent quite a fair bit of time there. But,
so, Laura, yeah, you would have played all your netball outdoors then, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I actually didn't get involved in netball until high school. So, I never spent the Saturday mornings out on the bitumen courts. But, Warwick has a great little netball association up there. But, yeah, I was never part of that, so... but it is. It was a fantastic place to spend my childhood. I mean, I did a lot of athletics and swimming as a younger girl, and it is just a small community. And I mean, it was just great. You always knew everybody, we probably led a very, very active lifestyle as young kids. Mum and Dad had us doing everything, which was probably good. I mean, I think I did lots of different things, and then once I started playing netball, just decided that I really enjoyed that. So, and obviously being a team sport, it's not quite as intense and full on as athletics and swimming being an individual event. Yeah. So yeah, I just really enjoyed netball and all went from there.
Now, you said you're on the land, the property?
Yeah, that's right. Yep, cattle and grain
It's not called Glengallen, is it?
Glengallen? No, well actually we own some land down on the Glengallen flat, so... It's not far from there's like the Glengallen Homestead, which is just outside of Ellera. So we're only about 10 minutes away from that, yeah.
And at high school, you must have had a terrific phys ed teacher or sports teacher who got you into the game and gave you tuition, because getting into it at high school, you're only a young woman still and representing teams at the elite level, you must have taken to it very quick.
Yeah, well, it was funny because, I mean, being a private school, we did all of our sport on a Saturday morning. So it was just, yeah, I sort of became involved in netball. And just, as I said before, I just loved it from the beginning. And we used to always drive down to take part in the Brisbane competition. So it meant we'd leave Scott's on a freezing cold winter morning at 5 o'clock and come down and play down in here in Brizzy. So it was a really great introduction into sports. I loved it.
What was there for a young girl to do as a teenager in Ellera? I'm just curious.
That was lots of things. I had an older sister, so we'd always we always managed to find something to do around the place. So as I said before too, we there was lots of families, and you just in a community like that, you just seem to know everybody. I mean, it's not a huge town, so it's not really hard to keep amused. But in saying that, I probably looking now, I'm living in Brisbane during the season and that sort of thing. So, I mean, it was a great place to grow up as a younger person, but obviously for opportunities with sport and that, Brisbane's probably the place to be for me at the moment. So,
did you ever go to the showgrounds in Ellera?
Yeah, for sure. No, I spent some time there.
Now, our research tells us that there's a series of murals at the gates of the showground that depict local milestones.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
What are those local milestones?
Well, actually, my grandma's on one of them.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a guy called Kenny Telford. He used to play polo because the Telfords are quite well known in Ullera, and they're polo fanatics. And Kenny Telford was a really great player in his day, and he'd always sit in front of a little shop in the main street in Ullera, and he always, you'd walk past him and he'd always say, g'day, g'day, and that was just his thing. Everyone knew him for that. So he's up there, and my grandmother's up there along with some of the Cowleys, and yes, there are.
And why is your grandmother on there, Laura?
It was just, I think it was just a series of photographs that had been taken during the history of Ullera, and they've just painted the murals from them. So, yeah, it's lovely.
Fantastic. And will there be lots of friends or family coming from Ullera to watch you play for Australia tomorrow?
I do. I have quite a lot of, obviously, all my family there. They've come down. My sister's a primary school teacher out at Junda, which is 3 hours west of Longreach. So she flew in today. So I'm very excited to have her along. And yeah, all my family will be along. And yeah, some friends are making the trip down. As I mentioned before, the Warwick Netball Association. They've booked the bus, and I think they're coming down as well. So it should be great. So everyone along.
Is this the first chance you've had to play in Brisbane with the Australian team?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Well, Brisbane doesn't normally host test matches, so it's a great opportunity for Brizzy to get this one. So it's great to be part of the team and to be able to play in front of your home crowd.
Yes, indeed. And you play goal defence, don't you, Laura?
Goalkeeper,
okay. Yeah. Well, resist the temptation to grab the ball and race down the other end for a shot at goal just to impress your family and friends, won't you?
I won't be doing that, that's for sure.
Have you ever played goal shooter?
I was thrown in there when I was in high school, but I didn't spend the next game there, so...
They sent you down the other end of the court.
Yeah, well, there's no backboard. It makes it really hard.
Well, no, there is. There's definitely a skip to it, so no, I prefer to be up the other end and trying to stop it rather than shooting, so yeah.
Mind you, you've got a very difficult challenge because you're up against the probably the world's best player apart from Sherelle McMahon and some other Aussies, but... From other countries, Irene van Dijk.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you stop her, Laura?
Depending if I do get a run tomorrow, I'm not sure. No expectations there. But, I mean, she's an amazing player. And, as you said, she's very difficult to stop. But I think it comes from the pressure out the front there too, the pressure that's applied by our defenders out the front, and just really you're shutting down, you know, the ball coming into her, because they can just launch it and bomb it straight into her, and she's quite good at catching straight under the post or doing she splits her legs, and her legs pretty much go from one side of the circle to the other. So she's amazing. So you just have to not give her an inch, and just play your heart out, I suppose.
You might just have to give her the old Ullera handshake, which is a sharp elbow in the ribs. What do you reckon?
Yeah, there's a bit of that goes on, I think, when any Aussie team comes up against the Kiwis. Mm. So, it does. It gets a little bit physical.
Mm. Well, we wish you the best of luck. And it's been terrific talking to you tonight.
Thank you very much.
The Saturday Soiree on ABC Local Radio. And we look forward to seeing your name up in lights in world netball for many years to come, Laura.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Laura Geitz, we were looking at the Darling Downs region, in particular Ullera.
That just conjures up a vision for me when Laura was listing off all the various relatives and family members coming down to Brisbane from Warwick, even as far out as Longreach. Once you're over the Great Dividing Range there and you're on the Darling Downs, you really do have this sense of an Australia that goes on forever.
Mm. Yeah. You keep going, you fall over the equator.
And, of course, as you're driving up that way, Warwick is a beautiful town. And you don't want to stop, or you don't want to go through, you want to get out at Warwick. Very, very attractive. Great drive. Anyway, directly we will be talking chicken curry sarg.
Funny we were.
Do you think the Australian Diamonds netball team are having that for dinner tonight on the eve of their match against the Silver Ferns?
Yeah, I just got back. I got the gig.
Hello. How are you, Scotty?
I'm good, Bill. Good, boys. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. I was worried there. I thought the curry pot was boiling over and you're in the kitchen with a chuck super wipe.
So my rupees were on the money. You'd have to have ghee for this, wouldn't you?
Well, we are pretty high-tech here at the Braidwood ABC broadcast facility, but sometimes we have dropouts. But it never ceases to amaze me what you can actually do with corrugated iron and tie wire. It's sensational.
You can even cook with it once you're finished.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, Scotty, put us out of our misery. We're intrigued by tonight's recipe, which is chicken sarg curry. What on earth is a sarg?
Well, sarg is spinach. Quite simply.
Chicken spinach curry then.
It's a great time of the year for spinach and it's one of those things that you can grow so easily, you know. I mean, particularly silver beet and chard, ruby chard, those types of things. Chuck them in the garden, they just keep going.
It comes up quickly too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. And there's always plenty of it. Good patch of silver beet, for instance, will keep the family going right through this warmer weather.
Jeff, I hope you weren't saying that chicken sarg curry comes up quickly, which it can.
Something to take away from this, everyone here, what you remember from Scotty's recipe or not, that is sarg. When you're puzzled by a menu at an Indian restaurant and you see sarg bobbing up all over the menu, whatever it is, Scotty, it'll be done with a sort of a spinach. I was going to say paste, but that's not quite the right word, is it?
Yeah, and it's actually green. It's a really green curry. You could say it doesn't look too appetising, but if it's dressed properly and presented the right way, it's absolutely wonderful. It's a beautiful dish, fantastic dish.
Sarg, of course, for those who are like me, uninitiated, it is spelled definitely. You've checked this: SAAG.
That's how I spell it.
No.
That's the accepted spelling.
That's
but
how
I'm
you'll
sure
see
in,
it on
in the
menu.
The script that they use in India. I'm being really culturally ignorant here.
Sanskrit.
It depends on which script. There's more than one.
Right. So I'm sure they don't spell it SAWG that way.
And if you're in strife, you can always use silver beet, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, I actually made one of these quite recently, and I did use all silver beet, and I have on many occasions. Silver beet is actually really good in this, fantastic. As you can with a lot of other greens, like bok choy and choy sum, all those different types of things can be used in this, no problem at all. You just need the very dark kale you could use as well, mm-hmm. if it's cooked for long enough. You just need stuff with very, very green, very deep green. I wouldn't use cabbage, for instance, but definitely.
It's not green enough.
No.
Now, Scotty, before we get into this, you can go one of two ways from where I sit with preparing Indian food, and that is you can go with the prepackaged and sometimes even pre-mixed and prepared spices, or you can get out the mortar and pestle and do your own and do them fresh. It's a more labour-intensive route, but it makes a difference to the end result, doesn't it?
Well, you can get the base made, such as the garam masala powder. I mean, a lot quicker than it takes you to take a trip to the supermarket, and a damn sight cheaper as well. So if you buy all good quality unground spices from a really good Indian spice shop or grocer, I mean, there would be, if you get some fairly hefty bags of what you need, I mean, you could make these garam masala powders fresh for every curry for 2 years, Yeah,
and it
then
really
again,
is
you want to keep your spices
effort.
Fresh.
But it is worth the effort. If you've got them fresh, and it's fun making it with the mortar and pestle.
Yeah, absolutely. It's money-saving. The more things like this that we make, the less that things are transported around the country, which is a big gripe of mine. And the flavour that you get from it is just so much better than anything you can buy pre-prepared.
Well, run us through the recipe, Scotty.
Okay, well, we need about 1.5 kilos of chicken thigh pieces with skin off. You can usually buy them skin off. 5 cloves of garlic, just chopped and minced, or crushed and minced. 2 large onions, again minced, 4 fresh chilies, finely chopped, Two large tomatoes, chopped, crushed. About a one-inch piece of ginger, peeled and minced. 4 tablespoons of milk. 4 bunches of spinach, washed, especially if you pick them out of the garden, because you could get the odd snail in there. Washed and chopped. 2 tablespoons of butter. 7 tablespoons of ghee. 4 tablespoons of garam masala, which we make like this. First of all, I'll put the other ingredients. We need some salt to taste and some asafoetida, which I'm sure you're going to question me about.
We're going to question you about that.
I saw asafoetida in The Lion King. Wasn't there? There was a song about asafoetida, wasn't there?
I believe that was Hakuna Matata. Oh. Wasn't it?
Garam masala, most people encounter it ready mixed and in the powder, but yep. You're going to tell us how to make our own. But asafoetida?
Mm.
Yeah, it's a derivative of a variety of fennel. Some people call it the stinking fennel.
That's
a plant. Yeah, derivative. It's powdered. You buy it powdered from good Indian shops. If you want to really impress your Indian grocer, go in there and ask for some hing, because hing is asafoetida mixed with a few other things.
Uh-huh. Has it got the licorice-y, sort of taste to it?
No, it really is a very unusual, very aromatic, almost stinky taste. But it is the thing that you can add to Indian curries to make them really authentic. It's just I can't cook a curry without it these days. I just love it. It's it gives it a real. It's not an aromatic kind of flavor in terms of something like cumin or cardamom. It's more of a, it's almost like an off flavor, if you like, but it's sensational. It really works well.
We might also point out then for people that are going to go and order it, asafoetida is spelled asophaetida.
Again, I wouldn't hold anyone to
Scott
that.
Spells how it I spell that way, it. Sorry. That's the Welsh spelling of the...
So you can pour over the spice racks looking for asafoetida, but what was it you said we should ask our Indian grocer for?
Hing.
Hing. That's easy.
Yeah, that'll really impress them.
It don't mean a thing if you ain't got that hing.
that's right. So back to the garam masala. Yes. Mm. We need 6 cardamom pods.
Yep.
6 sticks of cassia bark, which we've spoken about before. Mm. It's actually the thick bark from the trunk of the tree that you get cinnamon from. But you can use cinnamon sticks if you wish. 1 teaspoon of whole dried cloves. 2 teaspoons of dried fennel seed. 2 teaspoons of dried coriander seed. 3 teaspoons of dried cumin seed. And 2 teaspoons of whole dried hot chilies.
Mm. Starting to lose me now.
Yeah. Well, you can take those out if you wish. Or just
you've got to have them.
And then you get a skillet, put it on a low heat, and you just basically let them dry roast very, very slowly until they start to give off a really strong aroma. And make sure you don't burn them. But the best way to know that it was when it's ready is the vapor that's given off by it will actually start to irritate your throat and make you cough. And once you've done that, just put them into the pestle and mortar and grind them. If you have to do it bit by bit, that's fine. Just keep, put in a bit of the spice mix in, grind it, put it out, because a full pestle and mortar can sometimes be difficult to grind things finely in.
And that's so the whole lot all gets a dry roast, all everything. Eight ingredients.
Yep. They being the cloves, the fennel seed, the coriander seed, the cumin seed, and the dried chilies.
Yep, absolutely. Right.
Okay.
And you give it a shake and a stir as you're doing it, and there's your powder ready to go. So then we can start to make our saag, our chicken saag. So we just fry the chicken lightly in about half of the ghee and liberally sprinkle that with the salt and the asafoetida. So just cover it so it's not, and it starts to help it to brown as well, that asafoetida. And then for about 5 minutes, just lightly brown it and then set it aside. Put the spinach into a deep pan, add some water until it's covered. Bring it to the boil, and then once it's boiled and nice and soft, you can boil, you can really boil it down, because this is going to get liquidized anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've done that, remove it from the heat, let it cool, and then just put it into a blender and blend it up, and put a little bit of the water that you cooked it with in there to help the blender blend it. Set it aside again. And quite simply, just heat the remaining ghee with the ginger, garlic and chilies and onions and sauté until they're lightly brown. Add the crushed tomatoes, then put in the garam masala. Make sure you fry your spices for about 3 minutes. A nice hot pan. Make sure they're fried well. Mm-hmm. Then add some water because by that stage the spices will be sticking to the pan. So you want to deglaze that pan a bit. So put about a tablespoon of water in. Even a bit more if you want to simmer it, which you will, for about 10 minutes over a low heat. Then add the chicken with the milk and then just keep simmering that until the chicken's tender and fully cooked. Then just put your spinach mix in, mix it through, cook it until it thickens so that the spinach is starting to stick to the side of the pan a bit. Remove it from the heat and then stir through the butter. Melt the butter through it, stir it, serve it with rice, chapatis, rotis. Fantastic.
Beautiful. Excellent. Let's talk about the rice quickly.
As we often do.
Yes. What's the best rice to use? A lot of people swear by jasmine. I've had some people making curries for me lately who've been using wild rice, which tastes okay, but it doesn't really fit the bill. But what's a Scott Watkins-Sully format for laying rice on the plate?
Oh, basmati with this. Definitely.
Basmati. Yeah, I was going to say basmati. Yeah.
And how do you cook it so it doesn't stick and be gluggy?
I use a rice cooker.
Oh, there you go. You're a wise guy, aren't you?
My best mate, Mark Barrington, who you all know from Braidwood, he argues that he makes the best rice in the world, and he goes through this thing of washing it five times and while his left hand's on the top of his head and and then turn around three times, not the rice, him, and my rice is the absolute best, he says, but I say just get a rice cooker. It's good enough for every Asian restaurant you go to.
Mark sounds very good.
Yeah, well, he is, I know. But it's a shame that we're not going out to New South Wales tonight because he's not listening, so I'd like to warn him.
But for this, you'd recommend the basmati as a variety?
Definitely, yeah.
Can I just wind you back a little bit to where you were cooking everything over a low heat and you'd got up to the point where the chicken and the milk goes in. You keep the heat low there or do you turn it up?
No, you keep it low.
So that means you're going to have to cook it. So you'll have to cook it for quite a while once the chicken goes in.
Well, the chicken will have already been cooked a fair bit because they're quite small pieces. So when you brown them in the beginning,
okay.
So it's just enough so that the chicken is cooked through. Obviously, with chicken, we want it cooked through definitely, and nice and tender. So at that point, you'd be cooking it for probably about another 10 minutes. So.
And is chicken the best to do this with, or can you use other meats?
Oh, you can use all sorts. I love this with mutton. Beautiful with mutton. Of course, you have to adjust this so that you cook it a lot longer if it's mutton. Mm. You'd have to put a lot more liquid and slow cook the mutton with it. But this is a good one for a really quick dish. Of course, the other thing that you can do with this, I like to do this with fresh garden peas and baked. Ricotta is fantastic. Little squares of baked ricotta, which is just like paneer, really. Yeah. Which you know, in Indian cottage cheese, basically. And if you want a quick solution, get a good baked ricotta from the supermarket, and you don't have to make paneer. And it really is a good substitute for paneer.
And of course, it always tastes better the next day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, about 4 days later. Curry of the week. We used to have a joke when I was working shooting some documentaries over in Fiji some years ago. We used to stop at the Raki Raki Hotel up on the north of Viti Levu, and they had the most fantastic curry there. And we always used to go there, but we used to refer to it as curry of the month. It was actually curry of the day, but we referred to it as curry of the month.
And fair enough too. Hey Scotty, just while we've been talking, we've been contacted by Paul Connolly. And do you know Paul's name?
Paul Connolly? No, I don't.
Paul is from the second annual Great Victorian Camp Oven Festival, which is currently on now. Let's get him on the line for a chat. G'day, Paul. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Yourself?
Pretty good. Thanks. You're talking to the Coulda Beans and our resident camp oven maestro, Scott Watkins-Sully.
How you going, Scott?
I'm good. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, pretty good.
Where's the festival on?
It's on at Hayfield in the Gordon Street Reserve. And we've got, at the moment, we've got quite a few teams battling out for the main meal competition.
Oh, are you one of the judges, Paul?
No, we've got some unbiased opinions, isn't there?
And have they been set a task of what to cook in the camp oven, or are they allowed to go free form?
They can do whatever they like.
Mm.
What is anyone cooking a sarg?
Sorry, anyone cooking what?
A sarg.
No, we've got. Right. I can give you a recipe that we had from last year from one of our cooking teams.
Yep.
And they did a 3 game bird roast, which they had a quail stuffed in a chicken stuffed into a turkey.
Oh.
They even gave you instructions on how to obtain these birds.
Which instructions. I would have expected at a competition like this that they would have hunted down and killed each of the birds themselves.
Well, they reckoned it was easier to get it from the RSPCA. Just don't tell them what you're doing with it and remove all splints and bandages before cooking.
Actually, has it got a name like Turkodon or something? Or?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny, that name came up last week, but we were using it here, you know, a year ago.
Mm, all right.
And as far as your curry of the month goes, or curry of the week, I always thought that's what you did to your beef curry after it went off.
Now, Paul, how many contestants have you got?
I think we've got about a dozen teams in the main cook-off there today.
And what's the limit on a team? How many are you allowed?
We haven't put a limit on that. Some of them have got 6 people in them. Some of them have got 2.
Mm. Oh, Scotty, I think you better get down there.
Yeah, a bit of competition is always good,
and
isn't
it? We're having a breakfast competition and a lunch competition tomorrow.
Excellent.
We've also got, tonight, we've got, for those that are listening, we've got the Distance Country Band playing at the moment.
Mm.
And then from 8 o'clock onwards, we've got the John Lawrence Band.
Oh, both good bands. I think they're both from the Mornington Peninsula, aren't they?
They are. And they're the John Lawrence Band playing through till midnight tonight, so... And it's only $5 to get in if people want to come down and have a good night.
Now, that's the Gordon Street Reserve Hayfield, and Hayfield's in Gippsland, isn't it?
That's correct. We're about 40 kilometres north of Traralgon.
On the road to Maffra? More or less,
on the road to Lycola. More would be a more accurate description, I guess.
Mm. Scotty, you would have visited those parts of the countryside when you were doing your book, The Australian Crawl, a pub guide.
Indeed. The Cricket Club Hotel at Kawa is one of my favourites, actually. And I just want to say hello to everyone there because they're a great bunch of people. So,
yeah, and they've got they got a rally on down there this weekend, which is to do with the... call it when they get dressed up in funny cars?
One of the bashes.
Oh, the bash.
They've got a bash rally on, or people from the...
Variety Club bash.
Down there at... Kawa this weekend as well.
Mm. Yeah, they've been very much involved with that. They've been funding raising funds, I should say, not funding raises, for about 15 years.
They're actually coming up to the Camp Oven Festival tomorrow, I think, and we've got quite an array of bush poets on tomorrow morning as well.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but it's pretty easy on a Sunday morning after a big night.
And, of course, you've got a lot of other things apart from the Camp Oven Cooking Contest. Scotty, you'd be pleased to know they also have a Best Handmade Oven Mitt competition. Have you got a handmade oven mitt, Scotty?
Oh, look, I've got so many.
You got an old jumper. That's what you use.
Now, Paul, this is the second annual. You're planning on having the third annual this time next year?
Well, we are, because as it turns out, this second annual one was about as successful as we wanted the first one to be.
Mm.
However, last year... As part of the Camp Oven Festival, we received 8 inches of rain on the 2 days that we held it.
Well, he's hoping.
Yeah, so on the Saturday, by the Saturday afternoon, we're all treading water.
Mm.
By the Sunday afternoon, we're evacuating people out of here. If they didn't get out by lunchtime, they were in for another couple of days.
That would have been the Damp Oven Festival.
Yeah, the Kawa Swamp has expanded to encompass the whole of Hayfield. Scotty, I think you should throw your fire irons in for next year.
I think we should all
should go next year.
I was thinking of getting down for breakfast. I mean, I should put this bottle of Hunter Valley Semillon away, but, I could fire up the Toyota.
Well, I'm glad you contacted us, Paul, and we really will make an effort to get down there next year because we've got a great association with Camp Oven Cooking through Scott over the past 4 or 5 years, and it would be great to support the Hayfield Camp Oven Festival. And they say about Hayfield, the closer you get, the better you feel. Ian.
That's our town slogan.
Yep. Well, we've got everything covered. Scotty will do the Camp Oven Cooking. Billy will knock up a handmade oven mitt. And Greg will do some bush poetry.
Well, no, I'm going to boil, actually.
Oh, the fastest Billy boiling.
That's me.
That's you.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I'll go in the daggiest hat competition.
And do you need a hat to do that?
Probably not.
I'll just sit on his head.
No, SunSmart should always be wearing a hat.
Mm. Good on you, Paul.
No worries. Thanks very much, guys.
Have a good time.
Paul Connolly there.
Put that in your calendar now, Scotty. We'll get down there for the third annual Great Victorian Camp Oven Festival at Hayfield in Gippsland next year. That'll be good fun.
I have a feeling these camp oven festivals and all are quite popular right around the country.
Well, you know who started it.
Scotty.
SWS. Mm. Don't worry about that. Scotty, look forward to talking to you next week.
Absolutely, I'll be here.
Happy travels. We welcome to the program our own roving troubadour, Greg Champion. Hello, Gregory.
Good evening, Billy. Good evening, team.
Champs, just as the lyric was saying in that marvellous piece of Australiana, that song Billy just played, driving around the corner and up comes another distant town. You're in another distant town, but a pretty special one, Maldon.
Yes, it's they say it's the Goldfields. The folks that I'm accommodated with here said they walked up the hill from here and came across diggings, and it's very dry in Maldon. They say, the locals, that even if it's raining all around, Maldon will miss out. Mm. I should say where it is, because if you go up the Calder Highway out of Melbourne for about an hour, then you'll go across to Castlemaine, which I stopped in yesterday, and it is still a terrific tourist experience, and then about another 15K across to Maldon, or Maldon, depending on your preference.
What's their preference?
Oh, I haven't checked, because it's a bit like Malvern and Malvern and Malvern in both Adelaide and Melbourne, which has a range of pronunciations.
So it's in dispute, Champy. And of course, in Castlemaine is one of the oldest theatres in continuous use in Australia, isn't it? What is it called? The Theatre Royal?
Royal.
Yep.
We've performed Royal. There. I think it might only be beaten out by the one down in Hobart.
Now, you're not getting confused with the Theatre Royal in Castlemaine, are you?
What I'm thinking of.
No, I'm
talking about Maldon having it.
No, I mean the Castlemaine one.
You did say Castlemaine. But I walked past it yesterday, in search of a gents, actually. And the front of the theatre, the facade, is open to the public with some very hip and groovy kind of lounge chairs, and you can walk straight in off the street and into a kind of groovy lounge bar experience.
Champy, have you performed yet at this particular folk festival?
Yeah, I've had two spots and two to go.
Have you performed in the Natural Amphitheatre of Mount Tarangawa?
That will
the legendary Guinness tent, the Troubadour wine tent, or the Kids Marquee?
Yes, I've been in the Guinness tent and another venue, and tomorrow I have the privilege of the Natural Amphitheatre gig.
Ooh. Lovely, that'll be good.
Have you had your face painted?
Amber, the face painter, is in attendance at the Maldon Festival.
My face feels always painted.
Champy, what distinguishes the Maldon Folk Festival from others?
Its location in Maldon. There's a little joke there, a little cheek.
Very good.
Thank you. Well, some say, some do feel that Port Ferry has grown too big. It's huge, Port Ferry.
Yeah.
And they do feel that around the Victorian traps that Maldon has taken its place nicely as the comfortable-sized festival. Across Victoria and all states, I know Peter Dennehy's here. He said to me last night, just out of the blue, this is my favourite festival.
Well, that's a pretty strong recommendation coming from Peter.
He's done a few.
And, of course, the Maldon Festival's been going for quite some time. I think the mid-70s it kicked off, didn't it, Greg?
I saw a banner today, Bill Baxter, that said the Maldon Festival was 1974. I had no idea it was that old.
Mm. Mm.
Hey, and have you had a chance to see anyone else perform?
Yes, I have. In fact, today I did the very... a very festival thing. I hung around the festival all day.
What acts have caught your eye, or your ear, should I say?
All right, well, here's the program. Should I scan the program for names you will know?
No, what I want you to
tell us... It'll take you a long time to find one.
Tell us about the ones that that particular you found particularly enjoyable or memorable.
You're a very cheeky boy, Ian Cover, and don't do it again.
Well, I've got a list here. Come on, name ones. Have a Greg Champion hit pick discovery from the folk circuit.
All right, today I saw, I'll cover the program here. Today I saw, and I watched a lot today, so in the Guinness bar or tent, I saw Peter Dennehy.
Yep, always good.
Rose Bygrave.
Yep.
I watched Nick Charles.
Yeah, tell us about Nick.
Nick plays blues and roots guitar. He's a finger-picking instrumentalist.
and he played three different guitars while I was watching it, a six string, a 12 string acoustic, and a steel guitar, Dobro style guitar.
Mm. Well, you mentioned Pete Denner and Rose Bygrave. They've been around for a long time. Is Nick a newcomer on the scene?
No, mate. Nick's been around for a while now. He's got a bit of a name. He's, in fact, yeah, he goes way back. Yep.
And did Peter do good sort of nothing, yeah?
He did a great thing. He'd had an email from a 16-year-old who said, who he'd become friendly with through My Book or FaceSpace, you know, one of those. Mm. And this email, this kid had said to him, he'd become a bit of a fan, I can sing your song. My mates say I should duet it with you. Peter took a punt and got him up on stage. Well, it brought the house down. The boy did it word perfect.
Fantastic.
And, of course, it was a terrific showbiz manoeuvre.
Was that a yeah, dunno, nothing?
Correct.
Yeah.
So the kid just did the yes, the no's, and the...
Absolutely right.
Dunno's.
Yeah. Well, I showed Peter's video of it to my 16-year-old son, who sat watching it impassively and said, what's funny about that?
Mm. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, it's all in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? Right.
Champs, it's, Malden is a beautiful place, and I can only imagine that the venues, notwithstanding the natural amphitheatre, are wonderful. There's some interesting and exotic folk musics there. I noticed one here in the program called Appalachian Heaven. I adore Appalachian music. Have you had a chance to have a listen to them?
No, because I can see they're on this evening. Not sure if they've played already, but Appalachian Heaven notwithstanding, and they probably will be wonderful as everything is.
Yeah, I saw them on the program. I thought they were an ice cream.
That I've got to say, in all frankness, between yous and me, there's a refreshing minimum of exotic world music.
Now, you've got your Musicy Manjaro.
They are exotic world music, but we can make an exception for them because they're card carrying experts.
Mm. Mm. Oh well, I'm sure festivals don't exclude world musics, but it might be that the more organic form of folk music is favoured here at Malden.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with world music, or even indeed in exotic world music. It's just that after you've seen three bands, you've seen them all.
I just wonder if you canvass the folks there at the Malden Festival, whether you say, proffer this to them. G'day there, I'm Greg Champion. What would you rather see at this year's festival, world music or Rooty Toot with mouth trumpet? See what sort of response you get.
You can't compare oddities of different types.
It's apples and oranges, isn't it, champs?
It's more like pears and more like steaks and fish fingers.
How do the Emu Creek Bush Band go, champy?
I'm not sure, but just talking animals there for a sec, Covey. I've seen a surfeit of native animals today. I've seen
none of them would be cooked either. I
hope you kept your distance.
I saw sheep and rabbits.
Gee, look at you going
nuts.
Oh, yes,
the sheep and the rabbit really should be on the Australian coat of arms, shouldn't they? Hey, champs, I see on the bill that the hornets are listed. Is that Craig Horn's hornets or a different bunch?
It's Craig Horn's hornets, and I've just come from a conversation with the three of them.
Tell Craig we say hello.
And the two Wayne brothers, whom you can name the surnames.
Bert?
Yes.
And
Duncan.
Correct. Thank you.
Who are they playing with?
Craig Horn in the Hornets.
Oh, so really? Are they rock and roll allowed in there, is it?
Well, that gets through. That slips through the net, I don't know. Well, that's modern folk festivals these days. Mm.
And have you set up a little merch stand for yourself, Champy, selling your holders and caps?
They do it for you. Mm. So you just deliver the CDs to the tent, and they flog them for you.
That's
no
great.
Commission. How good is that?
Who's playing the part of Wavy Gravy? Who's just wandering around the fairground wearing a ridiculous floppy clown's hat and, you know, saying non sequiturial remarks to people?
It's a good question. There's a number of different compares, and they've all got a little bit of Wavy Gravy in them.
As indeed they should.
Every festival compare has a Wavy Gravy in there somewhere trying to get out, don't they?
Now, we go from those blasts from the past to another blast from the past, who's performing on stage tonight. We mentioned this earlier at the Morabbin RSL. Daryl Cotton is on stage at the moment. Hello, Daryl.
I'm good, mate, but the audience is turning ugly because we've been waiting. We've been on hold for 30 seconds and we've stopped the show.
All right. Now, how many...
Hello, there could have been champions, everybody.
Hello, Moorabbin RSL.
It's packed. It's packed, mate. They're hanging from the rafters.
How far into your set are you?
We're just about to do a drug song. Which is one of Jimmy Keyes' songs. They're all drug songs, actually.
What are we doing?
You know that Bob Marley had a picture of Jimmy Keyes on his wall?
Oh, so you're there with the full Cotton Keys and Morris Minor.
Jimmy Keyes, Russell Morris, and myself and our band, and 500 people here at the Cheltenham RSL.
Cheltenham? Listen to We don't want you to get lynched.
No, we're all right, but we've got to keep the show rolling because this isn't real good live here like this, you know. Me talking into a telephone.
Well, is Jim about to do 5'10 man, is he?
No, he's going to do... What's the song you're going to do, Jimmy?
Elevator Driver.
Oh,
Elevator
yes!
Do you want to try to have a listen to it?
Oh, we will.
Do we ever.
Maybe we could do a more sensible interview at another date.
This is the first for Australian radio.
We'd love to have you in the studio one week.
Hello, Australia.
It's definitely Elevator Driver, but I think we're getting some kind of phasing effect because of the telephone being dropped on the floor.
We apologise for the sound quality, but there they are, still performing live. Daryl Cotton, Jim Keyes and Russell Morris on a Saturday night. They're very busy, hard-working boys, and they play all the old songs, and the crowds just love them, as I heard a few weeks ago.
And to Cheltenham RSL. We should get them in the studio one weekend.
Oh, well, if they're not performing, that's the problem. They're so busy.
Yeah.
I said to Daryl, come in one Saturday, and he said, oh, mate, I've got gigs on all the time. And he said, oh, well, we'll try and do a live cross. So we heard them there, and the crowd were most tolerant. He was on hold for a couple of minutes, but
that was Elevator Driver, all right.
Yeah,
yeah.
When I saw them the other week, they didn't do Elevator Driver, but they did 5'10 Man early in the set, and then finished off a little bit later, of course, with Turn.
Oh.
Up your, I'll have the song list for you on a Sunday night program in the not too distant future. Yeah. But Daryl, of course, came to prominence originally in Zoot.
Yeah. Pink Zoot, as they were initially.
So what I wanted to ask Daryl about, but he's too busy helping out with Elevator Driver. When we get him in the studio, I want to ask him about the Young Doctors.
Was he in the Young Doctors? I never was into the Young Doctors.
No, Rick Springfield, I think, was in the Young Doctors.
I reckon Daryl was briefly in it too.
I think so.
Yeah, Rick was. I can remember Rick being in it.
Rick had a large part.
Wearing a white doctor's coat.
Yes. Because he's always wanted to go to Bunnies.
Yes, it does say here on this... information provided for us by Young Andy. Cotton has acted on the Australian soap opera The Young Doctors.
Good memory, Jeff.
And appeared in the lead role of Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten that. I'd forgotten that there was ever such a show as Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
That was written by Mr. Webber and Mr. Rice.
But quite a few of them came and went through the YDs. It was such a shame when it ended.
Yeah, and you've always said that in the past about wanting to go to Bunnies, the nightclub. Yeah. And all Billy and I wanted to do was go down to Jim Bacon's pub in Belmont.
I would have been quite happy with that.
Have a beer with John Quinney.
Well, no, you wouldn't have to have a beer because you'd have Quinney's after he had one sip and stormed out.
But they were always heading off to Bunnies.
Yeah. Did they have people performing in Bunnies? Like, was there a combo in the
corner?
Never
saw.
Did you hear music?
No, you never got there. Bunny would come in.
Oh, I see.
That was Ugly Dave was Bunny. And he ran Bunnies, and they were like, well, let's go to Bunnies, and they'd disappear off to the side of your TV set.
Oh, so they never had scenes set
bit,
in Bunnies?
It was a bit like going to Burrigan.
Oh, righto. Or Narrabri.
So which made it all the better, because you could just imagine...
Dunlivin.
Burrabri.
You could imagine how fabulous Bunnies must have been.
Because on other long-running American soaps, they did things like go to nightclub or bars and those sort of things in Days of Our Lives and things like that.
Oh, Doug's Place.
Doug's Place.
And then
Doug's Place.
And then Doug upgraded the whole operation and he opened Doug's on the Lake.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we've been down to the Cheltenham RSL down there in Victoria tonight. Yeah, Daryl Cotton there with Jimmy Keys and Russell Morris. I think it was Russell leading the guitar in.
And I'll make a promise to people listening to the show right here now. When Billy eventually opens Billy's place, if you're listening tonight, we'll put your name on the door.
We will. And having been to Cheltenham RSL, Billy, one Saturday night we ought to check in with what's happening at the Dunlivin RSL and see what's happening down there.
Definitely. So was it Cheltenham RSL, not the Moorabbin RSL?
Yeah, apparently that's what he said. Yeah.
So you know, I was thinking it was the old South Side Six.
Oh, that was a pub. Pub rock venue.
We were speaking to James Rain a couple of weeks ago, and James will be playing the Moorabbin Town Hall. So the Bayside areas of Melbourne down there, alive and well for live entertainment.
They're rocking, but I'll tell you what, they're going to have to work hard to match the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles with Anthems of Oz.
They're the clubhouse leaders.
Mm.
Still, over the course of the summer, on the Saturday soiree with the Good Have Been Champions, we'll be taking you out and about many more occasions to match the club scene.